Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
It's Wednesday, the 5th of January, 2022, and this is Reconstruction, the Construction Index podcast with me, David Taylor, and online news editor, Phil Bishop. Happy New Year, Phil. Did you have a merry festive season?
I had a very, very happy holidays, pleasant Christmas, not too quiet, not too rowdy.
Good.
And a very quiet New Year, though, I've got to be honest. How about yourself? You had a good break?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, I had a good time. Yeah, I had all the family back here, which was nice. My oldest daughter had literally just recovered from COVID, and it was all touch and go. But she managed to make it back. We all tested negative, so we could relax. It was fine. But this was the first year for years when we forewent a family tradition.
Oh, yeah?
Normally, we all sit down and watch Elf. I don't know if you... Do you know that film?
Will Ferrell? Is that Elf?
Will Ferrell, yes. Yes, it's become I think for many families, it's become a bit of a Christmas tradition. It's extremely cringe-making, but very, very funny.
Yeah, a bit broad for me. I have trouble with it.
No, I mean, it was a slightly different Christmas, but we didn't... one or two Christmas traditions went out the window. We didn't watch that. But I did watch something... which I wanted to discuss on the podcast today, actually. I did watch something which was almost as funny, but perhaps even more cringe-making. And that was, it was after Christmas. It was In the Factory with Greg Wallace. Have you ever watched that?
Oh, I've seen a couple of those, yes. Yeah.
Well, the reason I wanted to discuss this was that the factory in question was JCB's roaster factory. In fact, it wasn't just that factory. It was the cab factory and the engine factory up there as well.
Oh, was it? I miss that. Normally, JCB are very good at putting the word out and saying, hey, everyone, we're going to be on telly. But I didn't hear about that.
Well, no, exactly. It was I sort of stumbled upon it and I thought, well, I'll look at this. I found it a rather unsettling experience. I mean, Greg Wallace is just like Buddy the Elf, an adult-sized cartoon kid on a constant sugar high.
Well, that's his shtick, isn't it? It's enthusiasm. You're supposed to like enthusiasm, especially in TV presenters.
Well, I go for that. And in fact, his co-presenter, Cherry Healy, is very much in the same vein, but just too over the top. I mean, with a completely unwarranted enthusiasm. I don't know, Greg Wallace has this sort of manic quality about him. There was a bit where he was watching somebody tack welding up a digger boom, and he just went, he's like a spaceman on bonfire night, which was completely over the top, completely unnecessary.
Presumably the reference to the welder having the big mask on, the helmet and everything.
Well, I imagine so. But I have to say that Greg Wallace appeared to be looking on without any eye protection at all. I mean, I'm not quite sure whether or not it was edited that way, but either he went completely blind or he's got resistant eyes. But no, I mean, he also sort of, he came up with these strange, totally unrelatable comparisons. He was talking about the assembly hall at the Roaster Factory, and he says, it's even longer than Westminster Abbey! As if everybody knows how long Westminster Abbey is. And that's the weight of 40 African elephants. It was just completely, completely bonkers. I couldn't quite figure out who the target audience was because it was so banal in many... The presentation was banal. I mean, and there were some obvious things like Cherry Healy went to see the engines being made. And we had a very useful and quite informative introduction to the four-stroke internal combustion engine, which I think would have appealed to a lot of younger viewers. And a lot of the stuff was very sort of basic information aimed at that sort of cohort, I would have thought. And yet this was on at about 9 p.m. on BBC Two. So presumably aimed at an adult audience. I mean, there was one quite interesting bit, which told me something I didn't know already. They had Ruth Goldman on. Goodman? No, Ruth Goodman. the TV historian. You usually see
her. Oh, I like her. She's quirky. She's fun.
Yeah, she's usually in a farthingale and a mob cap and boiling something in a muslin bag. But this time she was up in Newcastle talking to another female historian about hydraulics. And this was quite interesting because I didn't know that hydraulics were first employed, I don't know if they were first invented, by William Armstrong up in Newcastle Docks. His father was a merchant, and William Armstrong had a sort of technical bent, and he realised that it would be much easier to load and unload vessels at the docks if you could have powered cranes, basically using cranes instead of, you know, human power or horsepower or whatever it was. And so he invented these water hydraulic cranes. They used water pipe from the hills above the town, above the city, so these were the first hydraulic cranes. So that was interesting. That was really interesting. I don't know. The whole thing, it was
It sounded like you weren't the target audience and perhaps none of our listeners.
I don't think I was. I was entertained. I mean, looking back, I was aghast. I think I watched the whole program with my jaw open. It was great publicity for...
I was going to say, there will be someone who would be as fascinated by that as I was many years ago, watching it might have been a Blue Peter segment or something like that, explaining how they get the word Blackpool all the way through a stick of rock.
Actually, that is magic. That is a feat of engineering.
But I can't imagine JCB have got many manufacturing top secret things that they want. I mean, there might be some top secret things in the design software or something, but fabricating
construction machinery out of metal
is not great secret stuff, I don't think, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. And it's interesting that you should mention that because, you know, you think of manufacturing diggers as a typical quote-unquote metal bashing industry. And I was quite surprised how much actual bashing was going on. Again, Greg says, why is he hitting it with a hammer? And I actually found myself asking the same question. I mean, this chap was tapping a plate into place so that he could weld it accurately. And there was another bit where they were banging these cotter pins into the boom hinge with a bloody great big sledgehammer. And I thought, I'm sure the Japanese and the Koreans would probably have used a hydraulic press to put those in. I don't know. Maybe everybody bangs them in with a great big hammer, but there was a lot of bashing going on. And yet JCB has this state-of-the-art sort of design wall in their design studio. I mean, they use really high-tech stuff. We saw relatively little of that, actually. It was mainly the metal bashing stuff. But I think maybe that's the sort of thing that, again, probably appeals more to the target audience, whoever that was. But, I mean, it was great publicity for JCB. There's no doubt about it that these processes and these machines and the end result looked very impressive. And certainly Greg and Cherry were completely bowled over. I mean, they were barely contained themselves when this thing rolled off the production line. But, yeah, I suppose there are lots of people there who thought, oh, that's how they do it. And so is valuable. And I'm sure there were factories. This is the only one of this series I've ever watched. If they went and did some sort of other factory, I'd probably be just as in awe of, I don't know, how they make zip fasteners or something like that.
Well, I saw one a couple of years ago, maybe a bit more, where that a New Balance training shoe factory somewhere in the UK, I can't remember where it was, and I found that quite enjoyable. And I was so impressed by the way the products were, you know, seemingly almost handmade, individually stitched, and made in the UK. I thought, oh, I want a pair of them. And went online, got the perfect chain, and they're very nice training shoes. I walk the dogs in them in dry weather.
So you fell for it, in
other words. Well, the sticker on the inside says, I don't know if it's Taiwan or Bangladesh, but mine are not made in the UK. So I kind of feel slightly cheated that they're not handcrafted by Greg Wallace and Cherry Healy.
No, indeed. Well, I wouldn't be rushing out to buy a JCB 3CX. I simply can't afford it. But
think of the return on investment. Of course you can afford it.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, I'll sell the house and buy one. Good idea. There's quite a lot of hand operations at JCB, it seems. They do a lot of I think they do all the painting by hand, and that did surprise me because I thought that would have been completely automated, but no, they're two blokes up on a gantry spraying these boom sections. And it was explained that they do that because I think it's because the shape of the thing they're painting is so irregular that you can't really trust a machine to get into all the nooks and crannies, whereas somebody with a pair of eyes can see whether or not they've got an adequate paint covering. So that was quite interesting. I hadn't realised that they did it by hand.
That surprises me. I thought there would be dipping involved.
No dipping. Oh yeah, there was why are they yellow? And of course it's because they need to be they need to be visible on site, the rest of it. Yeah, so quite an interesting evening's watch that was.
What channel was that on? Can people still see it anywhere?
That was on BBC Two. You can get it on iPlayer.
Sounds like you're not recommending it though.
It was the first in a new series, and I don't know, I might have another look. Once I've sort of become acclimatized to the sort of deluge of enthusiasm from the presenters, I might be able to look past that and actually see what's going on behind
it. Sounds like you need a shot of Wallace immunity.
Yeah.
Well, we really should be... It being our first episode of 2022, we should be looking into crystal balls. That's a traditional thing to do at the beginning of January, either making resolutions or predictions and forecasts. Have you got any resolutions, predictions or forecasts?
I never make resolutions, Phil, because they never last a month, let alone a year. So gave up doing that a long time ago. No, I haven't got any resolutions. And I suppose I've got a wish list at the top of my wish. Well, I'll tell you what. Do you remember there was a project which called Crossrail? Do you remember that?
Hasn't it kind of gone out of the mind, rather?
I just wonder, do you think we might see it finished this year? When was it supposed to be finished?
Well, it's,
a couple of years ago,
it
wasn't
is it? Sort of finished. It just hasn't been proved to work yet. I think they're in the testing phase, aren't they? There are trains running up and down it, but... No one on them.
Well,
apart from someone with a clip.
I honestly don't know. I spent New Year. By the way, I spent New Year in London. Went up there to visit some friends. So whizzed around a little bit on the tube. No sight yet. It's as if the Elizabeth line didn't exist. I suppose for all practical purposes, it actually doesn't at the moment because there are nobody travelling on it. No sign of it. And it was. I suddenly thought. Hang on a second, there's supposed to be a new tube line opening up. And no sign of it. And it made me wonder whatever happened to it. Because, of course, that's all we talked about a couple of years ago. The tunnelling was amazing. The engineering was mind-boggling. And then it came to the M&E and everything fell apart. And I don't know whether it's been hushed up, but it's certainly gone extremely quiet, put it that way. So I would like this year, I'd quite like to see the grand opening of the Elizabeth line. That's at the top of my wish list anyway. What about you, Phil?
Well, I don't have such lofty ambitions. I don't. I'm loath to predict or hope for anything after the 2 years we've had because stuff, viral stuff, just seems to keep getting in the way. However, today is Wednesday, the 5th of January, as we speak. I am actually feeling quite optimistic because I did my daily news reporting for the Construction Index website this morning. And there are a plethora of major contract awards being announced today. Lang O'Rourke building a new humanities building, £170 million building at the University of Oxford. Colas winning a £328 million highway maintenance contract for National Highways. McLaren getting, a couple of these were before Christmas, McLaren getting a £77 million contract to fix cladding on the Charlecotts estate in Swiss Cottage in London, that sort of post-Grenfell mm-hmm. fix job, the botch that Ryan yeah. and Harley Facades did, it's all been put right again. The repair, the £77 million, is more than the £60 million that Ryan were paid to do the refurb, whatever it was, 10 years ago or so. And then there were several other. Farrans, a £50 million contract to build a residential care home and retirement village in... Flitwick in Bedfordshire. Stanhope giving Kier a contract value not disclosed, but it looks like sort of a 30 million or so, I suppose, contract to build two blocks of flats at the old BBC television centre in West London on Wood Lane. And a couple of other smaller contracts, just a bunch of stuff. Now, this could just be the backlog of, you know, the Christmas period, things being stalled.
Yeah.
But I like to hope it's stuff that had been... You remember, we spoke at the back end of last year how there'd been a slight stalling of contracts after cost inflation went up, and everyone sort of thought, oh, things are getting expensive, now what do we do? It could be the release of pent-up stuff, but either way, it just... When you see all these big contracts appearing in one day, it just gives you a slight cause for optimism that things seem to be happening.
Well, it's nice. Yeah, it's nice to see contracts coming through any time of the year. But there's always that slowdown, as you say, just before Christmas, and so a lot of that might have been sort of just left over from last year. But I don't know. There's been quite a lot of doom and gloom towards the latter half of 2021, and a bit of a slowdown, problems with shortages of just about everything, and then sort of contract awards apparently sort of beginning to dwindle. I did a little short analysis of the house building sector in the latest issue of the magazine, which I think is out soon. I haven't got my copy yet.
I haven't got mine yet. Christmas post.
Well, yeah, probably. And when it does come out, you'll see that there's the house builders have sort of taken a step back a bit. You know, they've been obviously the biggest sector in the construction industry for a long time. And been going great guns for many years, ever since the recovery from the big recession. And things are definitely slowing down in that area. So you think, well, you know, is this a sign of a general slowing down? Are we sort of edging towards another recession? And questions of energy prices increasing and fuel prices, which of course will be going up with the end of red diesel in April. It is all rather negative, but if they're still letting contracts, well, you know, it's not all bad, is it?
No, no. Talking of Ryden, I mentioned Ryden in connection with the McLaren getting the estate fix. There's a story worth talking about, I think, that we ran just a week before Christmas.
Oh, yes.
Which I thought would have got national newspaper coverage, but it didn't get much. I mean... We and the rest of the trade press certainly reported it. Mm-hmm. And this was Michael Gove, the Levelling Up Secretary, whatever it's now called, Department of Ministry of Housing, Local Government Housing and Levelling Up.
Yeah.
He issued an edict that Ryden, because of its involvement in the lethal Grenfell Tower refurbishment, was not going to be allowed to take advantage of the government's Help to Buy loan scheme. Ryden builds houses as well. And Help to Buy loan scheme has been a boon to many a house builder to help. Not that they need it. I think the housing market's been doing well enough without it. But anyway, they've had this effectively a government subsidy. And Ryden, Michael Gove has said, Ryden, you're off. You're out of here. You're off the list. I think a lot of people's reaction, mine included, immediate reaction was, at last, someone in government is grasping the nettle, the post-Grenfell nettle. I mean, I know there's lots of, you know, we've got the Building Safety Bill going through Parliament and things are happening slowly to change, or whether it will really change anything remains to be seen, but to address the issues of Dame Judith Hackett, that's her name, Dame Judith Hackett's review of the building regs and fire safety regs and all of that stuff, that's all happening. But in terms of holding wrongdoers to account, that's all been put on hold pending the official inquiry. And quite rightly so, there's no point in holding an inquiry and deciding ahead of time what the outcome's going to be. So then when I reflected on this, initially I thought, well done, Michael Gove, you know, telling Ryden, giving him mm-hmm. what for. I thought, well, hang on a minute. We've got the inquiry going on. Shouldn't we wait until, you know, we actually know who's to blame?
Well, that's what I thought, yeah.
So that I thought there's an element of grandstanding here for Michael Gove. And especially as this came around the same time that there was also a Barney, if you remember, that the Mercedes Formula One team.
Lewis
Hamilton had a Kingspan logo, a bit of Kingspan sponsorship for Mercedes Formula One team. And this caused an outcry from survivors of the and the bereaved relatives of the Grenfell disaster. And Mercedes got a kicking for getting into bed with Kingspan, as it was seen to be. And to be honest, Lewis Hamilton, a lot of people who will kick him for anything, no matter how brilliant he is.
Hmm.
But in the end, I mean, Michael Gove got stuck into this and said, oh, he shouldn't be doing this. And eventually, within days, Mercedes went, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was less than a week.
Mercedes said, OK, you know, this isn't worth the bad publicity, and they parted company. Then Gove, I read that Gove has also written to Ulster Rugby Club, who are sponsored by Kingspan. Kingspan's an Irish firm. They've got Kingspan on the front of their shirts. Saying you ought to rethink whether, it didn't say, I mean, it's nothing to do with the government, particularly the housing minister, whether a rugby club accepts sponsorship from whoever. I mean, they're not allowed to accept sponsorship from tobacco firms anymore, and there are all sorts of restrictions, but it's really none of Gove's business. But he wrote to the club, the chairman of the club or whatever, and said, you might want to rethink the... one of your favourite words coming up, the optics of this. Do you really want to be associated with this company? Now, I get that, and I'm keen to see just desserts meted out to the appalling organisations and people within those appalling organisations who caused they didn't cause the fire, let's not forget, it was the fridge freezer or the washing machine or whatever that caught fire, but that made the fire so lethal, it made the fire rise up the building, or the smoke rise up the building so quickly and spread it. That was all to do with the building materials and the way they were put on the building. But Kingspan, they rightly say, its insulation, all it did, 5% of the insulation used in the block was Kingspan brand, which they had nothing to do with specifying, selling. I mean, it was there on the shelves or in, you know, among distributors or whatever. And once, you know, it's like Kellogg's cornflakes. Once the cornflakes are in the supermarket, it's not Kellogg's fault if Jack the Ripper buys a packet of them. it seems a bit tough to me on Kingspan, not having heard read the full outcome of the inquiry and all of that. But it seems to me that if anyone is at the more innocent end of the spectrum, when you line up Kingspan and Arconic and whoever else, when you line up all the various material suppliers, Kingspan seemed to me, I don't know, the least culpable, but certainly among the very lesser culpable parties. Mm. So a bit harsh on them. And I do worry that Michael Gove is trying to keep up with the Trusses and the Sunaks in maintaining a political profile, and going, you know, look at me, everyone, I'm being loud and proud.
Yeah. Well, I do wonder, actually, if these companies, not just Kingspan, but possibly even Ryden, have some legitimate grievance, would have some legitimate grievance against government for doing that, for basically sort of slandering them. I mean, nobody has actually been found guilty yet, and there's this principle that, innocent until proven guilty. The inquiry is still ongoing. I mean, we know that Ryden was the main contractor, so they obviously got some questions to answer, but they haven't been found guilty, if you want to put it that way, of anything yet.
True, but it's all about association, though. Prince Andrew's not been found.
It's all about,
Prince Andrew's not been found guilty of anything, and he's lost a few jobs.
Yeah, that's true. But should the government be telling people, you should rethink this? It should be their decision, not Gove's. I think I totally agree with you about Kingspan. From what I understand, they weren't involved with specifying their product. They say, in fact, from the little I've read about it, that it was specified without their knowledge. And I don't see how they... I mean, their product is fit for purpose. It's just that the purpose that it was put to in this instance was the wrong one. So, I don't see how they can be held liable for anything here, except perhaps people might want to look at their publicity.
You mentioned publicity, exactly that. The only caveat I would throw in is I don't know whether it said on the packaging of the Kingspan material.
Yeah.
Great for stopping fires in high-rise buildings.
Yeah, they would have some questions to answer if that were the case. I doubt that is the case, though. I mean, if they were found to have falsified their fire tests for that product, then again, there would be some questions to answer. But again, it's all totally premature. And I understand why Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton wouldn't necessarily want to associate themselves. It's up to them if they accept sponsorship. And if they think that the sponsorship isn't going to do their image very much good, then, they can walk away. I think it's quite a different matter, though, for a government minister to go around advising, however informally, advising people to rethink their strategy here, because it's actually none of his business. So I think it is Gove just grandstanding in this instance.
Well, let's wait and see what he says about all the people who appear, to my mind at this stage, and I don't want to prejudge anything by naming them, Arconic. Let's see what it says about the other people.
Any other big news this week then, Phil?
Well, apart from all the contract awards that I mentioned earlier, it's as typical at the beginning of January. It's been a fairly quiet start, except we always get the New Year's honours list to pour through, looking for construction industry figures who have been recognised for their years of service above and beyond. And it was pretty slim pickings this time.
Yeah, it was.
The only construction knight this year was Doug Okavy, who...
Yes.
..is recognised for services to infrastructure and transport. He was the man who most recently said that we can build a fixed link between Scotland and Northern Ireland, but it would be stupidly expensive, so best not to bother. Yeah. But that comes... I mean, he's early 80s.
That's not his only achievement, is it? I mean, he's
very, very, very prominent. He, I think I first heard of him when he was chief tunnel engineer on the Hong Kong Mass Transit Railway in the early 90s or something. And then he was project director for Chep Lap Kok Airport in Hong Kong during that construction.
Yeah.
They basically built an island in the sea and linked it with all sorts of road and rail bridges and tunnels to Hong Kong itself.
Yeah.
And then back in the UK, he was chairman of Crossrail, 2005-2009, chairman of HS2 for a couple of years at the outset in the planning stages. So he's a very, very eminent chap, and I think he's regarded as one of the good guys and well-deserved.
Oh, yeah, I think he definitely deserves it. He's knocking on a bit, isn't he? How old is...
81, I believe. Now?
I was going to say, I'm surprised he hasn't retired, but he's obviously got quite a few years left in him yet.
I think he has retired, but people keep asking him to do things. He's one of those kind of people.
yeah. Who else got a gong? I don't remember seeing many people from the construction sector.
Well, I only found two. I mean, there were various people vaguely related, but the only people I reported on was Rachel Skinner, the past president of the Institution of Civil Engineers. She's a WSP director. They're not called WSP anymore, are they? They've now got the name of their Canadian parent company. I think it's Canadian, might be American. Anyway, whatever they're called. But she got a CBE. Services to infrastructure.
Yeah.
And that's quite common, actually. Presidents of the Institution of Civil Engineers often get something after they finish their term in office. Unlike Chief Execs of the Construction Industry Training Board, I thought Sarah Beale might have got something for her work she did at CITB. Yeah. Maybe it's too soon. She only left there in, was it September or November? November, I think.
Yeah.
But that's sort of public service job that normally gets recognised.
So who else do you think has missed out? Who would you give an OBE or an MBE or a CBE to if you had the...
Captains of industry routinely get knighted eventually if they stick around long enough and do a long enough job. And I've got four construction big noises I wrote down and thought these are people who within the business world have, I think, proven themselves. The ones that came to my mind, Alan Lovell, who's chairman of Interserve, who has been regularly associated with rescuing basket case jobs. He's been chief executive of it, hasn't rescued everyone, but he was involved in Conda before he went under. He was brought into Costain where they were in trouble. And when Interserve were in trouble, he has been instrumental in the restructuring, saving of Tilby Douglas out of Interserve. And is, I think, has been a city/industry elder. Other names, I think, slightly different types. But John Morgan at Morgan Sindall seems to have done a good work for an awful long time. Leo Quinn has not been around quite so long at Balfour Beatty, but he's done, I think, a damn good job at Balfour Beatty.
He
set up the 5% Club, which is some commitment to having 5% of your workforce. Now, I can't remember, is it trainees or is it women or is it both? But he has a, this 5% Club thing is a, you know, a social good, do-gooding thing.
Well, but Balfour Beatty is very good at that sort of thing. I mean, they're huge. I suppose they've got the resources to do it, but they are very switched on, very inclusive, and I think quite an enlightened organisation these days compared to some of their competitors. And I'm sure that a lot of that is down to Quinn's leadership. So I'd agree with you there.
And the other one, less high profile, I suppose, but a name that, I mean, maybe these people have got, you know, OBEs years ago and don't use them because they're waiting for their nightmares. but another person that struck me that has been around in a senior position forever is Jeremy Pilkington. Do you know him?
Oh, from VP.
VP. He was.
Yeah, chairman of VP PLC.
He was chairman and chief executive of VP, Vibroplant, as was, in 1981. He became, I think it was a family business, I'm not sure, but he's been chairman and chief executive of Vibroplant since 1981. In 2004, he stepped aside as chief executive, and is still chairman. So he spent basically 40 years in the boardroom of VP, which is now publicly listed, which is a hell of a thing. And again, maybe I don't know the man. Maybe he doesn't deserve anything at all. Maybe he's a bad guy. But on paper, at least, I would look at the name of someone like him and their record and think, that deserves some kind of recognition.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, he's obviously steered the company in the right direction for a very long time. It's a successful business.
How about you? Who's on your list? Who do you want to give a gong to?
Well, my list is shorter than yours. At the risk of seeming to be kissing too much arse, I would say my old acquaintance, Rudy Klein, I think he deserves something. He stepped down. Stepped down as chief executive of the SEC last year.
Has he not got anything already? I bet he's already got a gong, isn't he?
Well, I don't know, actually. He might have an OBE or an MBA. I don't know. He never uses any.
But cool people don't.
No, that's true. I think, but I mean, Rudy is a great bloke. He's a lovely chap. He's still active, of course, even though he's no longer SEC chief executive. But he's done an awful lot. He played a central role in the passing of the Construction Act in 1996, which outlawed various abuses like pay when paid and things like this. It really, really did take the industry forward an appreciable amount. And he's basically campaigned tirelessly for, you know, reform of the retention system, which we've discussed many times on this podcast. And he's, you know, champion of the specialist contractor. And I think he really does deserve a bit more recognition. He's a fairly high profile. He always has been a fairly high profile person in the industry, but I still think that he could do with a gong. The other person is perhaps...
You're going to say Greg Wallace, aren't you? Sir Greg Wallace.
No, I think if you gave Greg Wallace an OBE, he'd probably implode.
Knighthood, at least, surely.
No, the other person I thought that deserved some sort of recognition is probably a bit premature, actually, because she's still got a lot to prove, but I think she's doing a lot of really good work, and that's Professor Gabriella Madero up at Heriot-Watt University in Scotland. we've written a couple of things about her over the last couple of years. She and her team developed this thing called the K-Brick, which is...
you mentioned this, yes.
It's a brick. It's a brick and you use it like a brick. But it's very, very low carbon. It's not, doesn't contain any cementitious materials. It's not fired like a clay brick. I don't know what they, how they actually make it. But she sort of invented this thing, and there's now a spin-off company which is producing them. I believe that they've actually got their first couple of contracts. And she didn't stop there. She's developed a method of converting basically filth. It's just not just muck, it's filth, really unusable construction waste, sort of clay, filthy clay waste. Again, some very clever but secret method has been developed to turn this into a construction material, which can be used. I can't remember how it's used, actually, but it's again very low carbon. It's reusing a waste material. You know, what's not to like? And I think that maybe I should give this gong not just to Professor Madero, but to other people in the R&D sector who are working on projects like this, because I think, first of all, I think they're very interesting. I think that these projects, you know, trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear and save the planet at the same time is a great story. But they're doing really good work, and I think they should be encouraged. So she's another one, her and her team.
I've got another similar brick that you're talking about, which I wrote something about on the Construction Index, again, the week before Christmas. Scott Brothers is a Teesside recycling business that recycles spoil, basically, construction spoil. It's got, washes it and stuff that can be used as reused. But at the end of the day, they're left with gunk, which is useless. And they've been trying for a while to find a binding agent to turn this gunk into a brick. And now they reckon they've done it with their got an in-house scientist called Faisal Schieffer, who's produced some prototype bricks, which they reckon can, you know, do the job of what you're talking about, a regular house brick.
Well, yeah, there we are.
That's interesting as well.
Yeah, give him a gong as well.
On a more serious note, I mean, your professor is certainly a valid thing. On a more serious note, to be honest, gongs for overpaid boardroom executives, I mean, they've already got their big cars and their yachts. They don't really need ribbons around their neck. The people I'd really like to see getting more recognition are all those Johnny and Jenny construction workers who worked throughout the various lockdowns and health problems of the past 2 years now, is it? Blimey. You see, I mean, Network Rail seem to be quite good at getting, you know, rail workers occasionally get recognised for doing stuff above and beyond the call of duty, because it's a big organisation that can kind of support the nomination process. But your average hard-hatted construction worker tends not to figure very much. Not like, you know, nurses and lollipop ladies and librarians and community workers. Construction workers don't seem to get the recognition for when they go above and beyond just doing their ordinary job. And we all know people who are doing this. There are thousands of them out there. And it would be nice if more of them got, you know, not necessarily knighthoods, but, you know, a lesser gong just in recognition of great work that so many of them are doing. One other award I'd like to give is to whoever decides to come along and sponsor this podcast, because at the moment we're still fortnightly, aren't we, David? And we would like to,
yes,
to return to our weekly cycle. But if anyone does want to use our channels to promote themselves, we are here and available, and you will get a special ribbon from David, which he's going to make out of a very little bottle and some sticky black plastic.
All those hours spent watching Blue Peter weren't wasted.
I thought it was in the factory.
Well, we'll find some way of providing suitable recognition anyway. But we would be, if it's only our eternal gratitude.
Which is surely enough.
So is that it then, Phil?
That is it. So we've seen in 2022. It's going to be a optimistic and upbeat. It's going to be a great year this year. lots of exciting stuff's going to happen in a good way, and we're going to all get through it happily, healthily, if not necessarily wealthily. But we'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. But from David and I, this is me, Phil Bishop, saying thank you very much and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.